Moncrief
on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again for our parenting slot. Good afternoon.
Good
Joanna.
Afternoon.
Here's your first question. My 7-year-old son's best friend received some devastating news last week. He's been diagnosed with leukemia and I've no idea how to break the news. His mother and I know each other through our children and she told me a couple of days after they found out. The poor little fella is going to be going through treatment and while they are going to try and keep life as normal as possible for him, things will obviously change and it's expected that he will be in hospital for quite a while as he fights this. If you could offer any advice on how to explain what is happening to my son, I would be very grateful. They're in the same class, we live very close by, so we're always in and out of each other's houses and they go to the same swimming and football class together. Oh, God.
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, just for the adults involved in that equation, you know, my absolute sympathies, because I think when we hear something like this, we not only feel terribly sorry for the family and the child directly involved, but it also comes back to us going, gosh, what if it was my child? And that brings up a whole lot of emotion. So the first thing I would say is take time to process it yourself. Really take time to, you know, give yourself a few days to sit with this, get your own head around it and touch in with how you're feeling. And then when it comes to talking to your son, use simple but honest, clear language. Don't be ambiguous. Don't get overcomplicated with medical terminology. Start with something like your friend is sick and they're going to be in hospital so that the doctors and nurses can work hard to make them feel better. And that might be enough as a starting point.
Yeah.
And then as more questions or if there are, you know, more visible consequences of treatment, if hair is falling out or things like that, you give a little bit more information each time. The medicine your friend is taking, that's one of the things it does. It makes him feel better on the inside, but your hair sometimes falls out with it. But hair is hair and it'll grow back. And, you know, he'll get to wear nice hats in between. Let's go buy him a hat together. You know, something that's part of the solution. So I think as well, think about solutions with your child and for them, things they can do. Make a card initially. Maybe they could send in a play box they could put together, you know, just a little shoebox with fun toys and bits in it that they can send to their friend to play with, and maybe make use of something like video chatting on the phone so that they can stay in touch. Because I'm really picking up on that the sick child's parents really want to try and keep life as normal as possible.
Yeah.
So that's where you can be most helpful, is coming in on that, let's keep things normal. And for children, that's about laughing, playing and staying in touch.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's amazing where this is going to be profoundly upsetting for the parents probably any other parents. But the kids can probably can metabolize it a bit more easily.
Absolutely. And that's why, just don't overcomplicate it for them. Ask questions that you're answered, but don't give too much information without being asked for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know. And that's it. And don't promise. Yeah. Oh, and he's going to get better and all of that. Don't promise that. But that can be something everyone hopes for.
Yeah, of course. From one extreme to another, my husband and I are trying to decide if it's okay to kiss our baby on the lips. I remember my mum and dad used to do this with us when we were kids. It was obviously all above board, but nowadays I wonder that people might frown on it if we do it in public. Are there any norms about this?
Oh,
it's an interesting one.
It's a really interesting one, but this one got a bit of press, this topic, after the Beckhams posted photos online of them kissing their little girl on the mouth, and there was, you know, people in uproar over it and other people saying it's totally fine. So in answer to your question, are there norms? No, because there are never norms when it comes to parenting. It's really down to what you are comfortable doing and what feels right for you. But my message would be, please don't worry about what other people might be thinking, because you won't do anything if you're constantly thinking about that. I would say, and again, you're asking my view on this, so my view is there's nothing wrong with this at all. It's normal and healthy to show affection for your children. It communicates that you love them. I'm always interested when people get really, you know, uptight about the kissing piece, because we don't worry about tickling our children or cuddling into them in bed or bathing them or massaging them.
Yeah.
We don't complicate those with adult innuendo, but somehow kissing does. I'm aware of a number of parents who like to use the word fondie instead of a kiss when it's about kissing children, and sometimes that's an effort to differentiate, oh, a kiss is for grown-ups and a fondie is for children. You could do something like that if you really want to, but I'm just going to say we want children to be comfortable giving and receiving nurture and affection, and there is no evidence that shows that you in any way are causing harm by kissing your children on the mouth. It's more important that you show them affection however you can.
I'm just trying to remember now. I think I've kissed all my kids on the lips up to a certain age, but then it just kind of stops naturally.
It stops naturally, and also children will stop it. They're like, I don't want that anymore. Yeah. No better than a child to let you know you've crossed a line there. I'm okay. So we're talking about a baby. I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with this. If this is something that you and your husband, you know, are comfortable doing, don't overthink it. Don't focus too much on other people. And you do say, you know, you grew up in a house where it happened and it sounds like it didn't do you any harm. So,
yeah, no, hold it's on still to now. That. The toddler now will still, if say, gives a kiss, she'll try and give you a kiss on the lips.
Absolutely.
Now, usually it's a headbutt,
or a lick or something
for.
Or
just a smear a of snot, really. And there is, they kind of stop. You know, when they start to realise that you're parents and you're embarrassing.
Absolutely, which is around the age of four.
Around the age of four, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I do know one person I saw once on the street, a grown man kissing his mother on the lips. I found that weird.
That's a whole other matter, though.
That's a whole other matter. I couldn't specifically say there was any, you know, what was wrong with it. It was just, that's a bit odd. I don't know why. My cousin kissed my little one my 1 year old on the lips and gave her a cold sore.
Oh.
Never let people kiss him on the lips. Our little fella shouts, not in my face, insisting must be a kiss on his lips, says Dad. My beautiful face. Please help. This is actually that we've kind of got questions sort of like this before. I have a fear of dogs that I did my best not to pass on to my children. I never told them of my fear, but despite that, my 5-year-old girl was always a bit nervous around dogs. 3 weeks ago, I was out for a run and she was cycling beside me when two greyhounds came from a laneway and tried to attack us. They were snarling, barking, trying to jump up on us. I used her bike to kind of fend them off, and the mother in me managed to overcome my own fear to stand up to them, and they ran off. It was traumatic for my daughter. Since this episode, all she can see are dogs everywhere. If they're not on a lead, she's become overcome with fear, screaming and crying. The dog could be far away from her, not even looking at her, and she freaks out. She's such an adventurous 5-year-old, but we are unable to go anywhere at the moment with her reaction to dogs. Please help. How do we get her? How do we help her get over this?
Oh, I mean, it's just such a terrible experience to have had. I mean, first of all, that mother did incredibly well, given she has her own phobia of dogs. That maternal instinct kicked in and she stood up to the fear and was able to model a very positive response for her child. But in general, children tend to generalize a fright they got with one dog on one occasion into a fear of all dogs. This is also kind of compounded by the fact that some children, and you'll know if your child fits this description or not, if they're more sensitive in their inclination, but some children are simply more sensitive to stimulating experiences. They've a lower threshold for tolerating distress when something unexpected happens. So a fright isn't something that's transient and that they just let go of. It can actually overwhelm them and stay with them. So my first thing would be recognize and accept that she has a fear, and also accept that fear is not rational. So you can't rationalize through it. You can't reason and say, oh, but on the balance of probability, blah, you know, that's not how it works. I would say gradually introduce dogs again, but not in terms of let's go see somebody with a dog. I think you build up to that. You start by introducing dogs through books, children's books that have dogs in them, maybe children's TV programs or cartoons or movies that contain dogs, gradually increasing exposure to maybe a visit to a pet shop where the dogs are, you know, they're not out in the open, they're not wandering around. And if you are introducing her to a dog again, I'm going to suggest you start by introducing her to an adult dog, because they tend to be calmer in nature than puppies, who are enthusiastic and jumping around the place and keen and excitable. Another thing that I think would be useful, though, is to reach out to a therapy dog organization. You know, one of those organizations that train dogs for therapeutic use, like Irish Dogs for the Disabled, who do tremendous work in this area. Reach out to them, explain what's happened, and they may be able to put you in touch with somebody in your area who has a dog they've trained. And that might be a really nice way to reintroduce and reexplain expose in a safe way your daughter to dogs. But build up to that. But I think reach out to an organisation like Irish Dogs for the Disabled, or there are others as well, and see what advice they might have for you on this. I think you can narrate her experience, talk through, look, this is what happened. We were driving. I know you got a fright and I got a fright. But look, we're fine. Narrate the whole thing again, showing some fresh thinking and new perspective. Ask her to give her version of the story and just work through it slowly. If it didn't resolve itself, I would say within the next, I'd give that, you know, doing your gradual exposure, I would give that 8-10 weeks. If that really didn't resolve itself, or if you noticed that actually it was getting worse, then you might need to bring her to a professional just to help her process that fright. She got that experience in a way that isn't verbal.
Yeah, but she's only five. She's very plenty
young
of time to...
And there's lots of time. And also change is very quick when children are this young. They want to be reassured. They trust that their parents will keep them safe. You modelled this excellently in the incident that happened. So I think you will see change. It's just go slow and steady, gradual exposure.
Yeah. Maggie says, I remember the look on my dad's face when I said no to kissing him on the lips. I was around 11. I'll never forget his crestfallen demeanour. I feel like I grew up in his eyes then, says Maggie. Rebecca says, my dad used to give me Eskimo kisses where we rub noses.
Yeah.
Shows affection and I remember it fondly. No cold sores. Though, you know, the way like kids are snot factories. Like brother kissing the lips. The Dogs Trust will help. It's important. This is for the question we got about the little girl who got a fright with a couple of dogs. Dogs Trust will help. It's important that mum cures her fear too. The Dogs Trust have a specialist department for educating children how to safely interact with dogs. Crikey, yeah.
Yeah, they do a positive reinforcement model and teaching them what signs and facial reactions dogs have that might indicate how they're feeling and how they might behave. It's a really good system.
Okay, well, that's great. And the first question we had about the 7-year-old who'd just been diagnosed with leukemia, Brendan said, I had childhood leukemia. I'm now in my 50s. I just want to congratulate you on the advice given. It's spot on.
Oh, so good. And congratulations,
Plus,
Brendan.
Also, great to hear from someone in their 50s as a child. My 6-year-old daughter has always had a loose relationship with the truth, but recently it's become a daily occurrence. They are small enough lies. I already brushed my teeth. I finished my homework. I didn't have any juice yet today. She also sneaks things. For example, she hides things she doesn't want to wear, like her school tie or a specific pair of shoes. We find toys under her pillow at night that she isn't supposed to have in bed, and this morning she was found smuggling extra food into her school bag. I'm conscious of not making a big deal out of it. I don't want her to get the idea she is a bad person, but I'm worried that things could escalate if left unchecked. Last week she took some of her chewy vitamins to school. Although they are pretty harmless, she doesn't know this, as we refer to them as her brain medicine at home, and she has learned at school and at Girl Guides that medicine is dangerous, etc. But this doesn't stop her trying to bring them to school. We have a very busy house. Myself and my wife both work from home. We have 3 other girls, age 8, 2 and 1. Perhaps my daughter feels like nobody is watching, so she has free rein to do whatever she wants. I've also considered the possibility that she's doing it for attention, but she appears very unhappy when she gets caught and tries to sweep it under the carpet. The situation is probably not helped by the 8-year-old being the most brutally honest person I've ever met. We couldn't think of a single lie for her first confession. So this is our first experience dealing with the issue. Some advice would be appreciated.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to pick up straight away on the maybe she's doing it for attention. My rule of thumb is children rarely behave in any particular way because they're looking for attention. There are tons of ways to get attention.
Yeah.
I generally think behavior like this is a cry for I need a connection. And this is a busy house. There's 4 girls. She's the second oldest. There's a bit of an age gap between them and the younger two. And the younger two are still very much babies. And babies are very consuming for parents. So she may be feeling like, I'm a little bit lost in this bundle at the moment and I need a way to stand out. So just focus on that. Don't shame her when she gets caught out would be the other thing. You know, just try to do, there are a couple of things you could do. I mean, basically, children begin to lie as young as 3 years old. And that's largely because they have just realized that you're not a mind reader. So you don't know everything. And if you don't know everything, then I can maybe get away with a few things. So I need to test that out. That's quite normal. They lie a little bit more between the ages of 4 and 6, but they haven't refined it. So they tend to get caught quite a bit. And then by 8 years old, they will be able to tell a lie and at least some of the time get away with it because they've refined how they do
it
and how to, yeah. So in this way, I don't want to, you know, be saying lying is great, go for it. I'm just saying that lying and learning how to lie is as developmental a stage as learning how to tell the truth is. So I would say, you know, emphasize the importance of honesty in your family and model this by being much more interested in the truth than and disinterested in the lie. So you're interested when she tells you a truth, any truth, and you want to overpraise that. And you want to seem utterly disinterested in whatever the lie that narrative is. Use paradox. Children, you know, they generally like to think they can predict what their parents are going to do. So maybe try something a bit more creative, like, oh, you were making this story up. You've got such a great imagination. You make up great stories. I bet we could write a book together. What stories would we put in the book? Because you make up stories every single day. So let's write down all the stories you made up this week alone and we can put them in a book. So you're getting to the point of it, but you're doing it in a creative way.
Yeah.
Praise her when she owns up. I like when you're honest and don't give a consequence. If she has owned up, that's what you wanted to happen. So focus on praising that and just move on. So I think, you know, read books to her as well to get the message across. The Boy Who Cried Wolf was a classic in this area. You know, read that to her. And if you catch her in a lie, why don't you meet her in it and exaggerate it massively, theatrically, and make a joke out of it. And then reiterate at the end, you know, I'm most proud of you when you tell me the truth, no matter what the truth is.
Yeah.
And just keep coming back to that as your baseline. But just put it in the context that at her age, she's 6 years old, developmentally, okay, she has embraced the world of lying or creative telling of things quite a lot. But developmentally, it's very normal for children to do this. She's probably coming up against a hard one because her older sibling never, ever did it, which is just, that's an exception, not the
rule.
That
is, yeah. Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah. Plus, it's a very busy house too.
That's a very busy house. Two parents working from home and four young children all vying for connection with their parents who have, you know, as much time as they can give. So if you can take her out on her own, on a one-to-one, even if it's just put her in the back of the car when you're going to get the car washed and have 10 minutes while you're going through the car wash itself, and play a little game of thumb wrestling or hand stack or I spy. Give her that 10 minute one-on-one time or take her out for a hot chocolate just when you're on an errand so that she's getting a little bit of time. She may need that actually.
Yeah, yeah. There is a child in my child's class who's very pushy and I'm worried that she's walking all over my daughter. My daughter is 7, but this girl is a full year older. She is the oldest in the class and is about a foot taller than the rest of the girls and boys. I've noticed how bossy she is while they're waiting in the line in the morning, and at parties she often orders the children who can sit with who and who can play with what. It's so frustrating to watch. It's not a serious enough situation to call in her parents or their teacher, but I really don't want to see my daughter getting pushed about. We'd love to give her some tools to equip herself so she can push back a bit.
So a couple of things about this one that jumped out at me. First of all, I'm going to start with some empathy for the girl in question. If she's a full year older and she's the oldest in the class and a foot taller than everyone else, children who are that bit more physically advanced like that, they tend to get put upon by adults who expect more of them when actually they're still children. So a little bit of empathy there for this girl, that if people are always treating her and demanding of her like she's older, it's not a huge surprise that she takes such a strong, dominant leadership style role in the class. The other thing is, I read this a couple of times and I'm not hearing anywhere in it, and maybe I'm not seeing it, but that your daughter has actually voiced that there's a problem. It's that you're looking at this and you're not liking what you see and you don't want this to be an issue. I don't see that your daughter has had a negative experience. I don't see that your daughter has come home upset about this. So I keep coming back to a question about, ask yourself privately, quietly, who does this child remind you of in your own life? And are these your feelings and not your child's? And if so, be careful not to project what are your feelings about people like this child onto your own child.
Okay.
Because you could create a situation where actually there might not be one, and certainly might not be one yet. And other than that, focus on empowering your daughter without reference to this child. So when, you know, what would you do in a situation if, don't name this child. If this girl does this to you, what are you going to do back? Don't make it so personal, but do some little role play. Use the little figurines, little small world play, you know, little toys, little dolls at home, and play out social scenarios like standing in a line, like playing, and have one character be more dominant and bossy over the others and model positive responses. You can do it through play in that way, But I would say go easy on this, because it just didn't seem immediately apparent to me that this is an issue for your daughter at this time. But there's never any harm in empowering your daughter to be able to speak up for herself. You can do that proactively.
Yeah. Actually, there may be. I mean, this the other girl may be hearing a lot of, well, you're a year older, you should be doing
that
quite a lot.
You're a big girl. Yeah. You see, and that's where I found myself feeling quite empathic towards that child as well.
Yeah. Somebody texted in, now this is going back to the question about the fear of dogs. Rachel's suggesting hypnotherapy is very effective at that.
I would say too young.
Yeah.
For adults, absolutely. There's some proven outcomes with that and people have good results. But I would rather take a different route, a softer route with a child that young.
Yeah. Somebody else says, my daughter was an awful fibber as a child. We could never trust her and had a hard time trusting her now as a 23-year-old. It frustrates her, but she spent her childhood building up this reputation. Oh, crikey.
Oh,
the child who lies is not going to change. She will just turn into a lying adult. We all know one or two, says Diana.
Oh, Diana, that's a bit harsh. I don't think you can label a six-year-old and say that's it, they're a liar for life. It's really, really developmentally normal for children to experiment with the truth and push boundaries and see what they can get away with. And the examples that we were given in that one about, you know, I've already brushed my teeth and I didn't have any juice. They're really normal stuff. They're not big things. They're not causing anyone else any harm. So I would take a softer approach with that.
Yeah. Yeah, give her. She's a really little girl. My 3-year-old son becomes a nightmare when I try to get him to put his shoes on. Even if I try to put them on him myself, he goes into a tantrum. It has now gotten to the point where he's going to the nursery without any shoes on at all. No matter how much I try to reason with him that the shoes will keep him warm, that the path will be sore to walk on without shoes, etc., he won't be won around. Is this about control or does he have an obsession with footwear? I'm at my wit's end.
I bet you're at your wit's end because you're trying to reason with a 3-year-old and that's always going to result with you getting to your wit's end. Because you can't reason with a 3-year-old. I'd ask, you know, are there any other sensory sensitivities? Is it just shoes or is he okay with socks? Is he okay with slippers or sandals? Is it just shoes? I'm going to say something then that seems really obvious, but I always like to start with the most obvious thing. Is it possible the shoes are a little tight? Because I wouldn't wear them either if that was the case.
Yeah.
So get him remeasured and make a bit of an experience out of that. Bring him in to a children's shoe shop. They'll do a lovely job at measuring him and making him feel special. Get him to pick out his own pair of shoes, the colour he wants, if he wants them to be Velcro or lace tie, and do a little thing like that. There's another technique that I use, because when I work with children in the clinic, we generally end up with our shoes off to do our playing. And then, of course, you have to put your shoes on because I need you to go home when we're done. And if there's a resistance, I do this thing where I have parents put a kiss at the end of the child's foot and then we have to really, really, really quick get the shoe on so that they can catch the kiss and leave the room walking on kisses.
Mm.
So you could do a little thing with him that, you know, before he leaves the house, he's going to go to his daycare walking on kisses. So you get the kiss on and then you have to hold it and get the shoe on and, oh, there it is. He's got it on there. And just see, does that work? I've had some really shoe resistant children respond to that because they believe good things will happen when you walk on kisses. And, you know, why wouldn't they if you walk on kisses? There's also some books you could introduce to your bedtime routine that could help. There's one, now there's many, and look it up and look up this online and you'll find loads, I'm sure. But there's one in my head by a writer called Amanda Ware. And it was, Please Can You Put Your Shoes On? And it's about a mother negotiating with a 5-year-old about, please put your shoes on.
Yeah.
So I thought it might fit what you're dealing with. So I think, you know, try the walk on kisses, have a little reflection on, are there other sensory sensitivities, and maybe involve him in picking out shoes, but getting him remeasured and making sure these are special shoes that are the exact size for your foot.
Could it be he just doesn't like the shoes?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because yeah, ours does that. She hates change when it comes to shoes.
Yeah,
but she'll go, I want to wear those shoes. It's and that's the worst thing, giving them a choice. Oh my god!
Absolutely, it's why you've got children who've been wearing wellies in the snow last week who now want to wear wellies right away to the summer. You know, so sometimes you pick your battles. And if he'll wear any kind of shoe, if he would wear socks and you could put a summer sandal strapped around them, I'd go with that for now.
Kira in Limerick says, shoe resistant children, are they machine washable? Oh, that they would be. Joanna, thanks very much for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas